From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council, and honored to be sitting in this evening for Tony, and extremely thrilled to have you on board with us as well. Before we jump into the highlights, let me just tell you this. I spoke with Tony just a little while ago, and he wanted me to relay to you the deep appreciation and gratitude that he and his family have for all the prayers that you have given in behalf of his dad, who has undergone some pretty major surgery. I want to report to you that he is doing well and improving, but Tony and the family are deeply appreciative of your phenomenal prayer support. Please keep it up, and thank you. All right, let me give you some of the highlights for the program this evening. As the DOJ's stumbling investigation of Hunter Biden continues, it is revealing a two-tiered system of justice for sure, and House Republicans on both the Judiciary Committee and the Ways and Means Committee have subpoenaed some key officials from both the IRS and the DOJ.
The Department of Justice, just as the whistleblowers highlighted, they used numerous tactics that delayed the investigation to such a degree that the statute of limitations expired. They denied prosecution, which is why we want to know about this October 7th meeting and why we've subpoenaed more individuals to answer our questions. And they divulged information to Hunter Biden's lawyers.
Well, that was the House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Jason Smith last night on Fox's Hannity. So what will the testimonies of those who have been subpoenaed reveal? Well, possibly, could it be perjury from the U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland? Well, we'll be talking about that here in just a few moments with Missouri Congressman Mark Alford. Also, some good news. Yesterday, a federal court unanimously ruled that the state of Alabama can enforce its laws to protect children from gender mutilation and other gender procedures, reversing in the process a lower court's decision that had blocked this law. And this is a law all about protecting children. Well, Alabama's Attorney General Steve Marshall will be joining me to discuss that. And speaking of transgender agendas and so forth, officials at a California public library shut down and drove out a former women's collegiate soccer player from an event that she was speaking at when she attempted to tell her story and to emphasize the importance of protecting the integrity of women's sports.
I need to know why I'm being told to leave. Can you tell me why? I was a speaker at this meeting. I will leave the building if you can tell me why I need to leave the building.
That was Sophia Lori speaking to an official after she was told to leave, and she was the speaker. Well, we will hear from Sophia later in the program and allow her to share what she would have shared had she not been so rudely told to leave. And then finally this evening, as Christian parents and grandparents know, raising children to be true disciples of Christ is a real challenge. And we need a biblical worldview to do so. And a biblical worldview does not just happen. It requires constant vigilance. It requires engagement with our children. And how is that best accomplished? Well, Dr. George Barna has a new book on that very topic, and he'll be joining me with some very practical advice for raising spiritual champions. So we've got an important show coming your way, a packed show is also, and a reminder that our website is tonyperkins.com. If you miss any portion of this program or like to archive previous programs, you can do so there at the website, tonyperkins.com, and also we encourage you to take advantage of the many resources that are available there at the website. Let's jump into the program. This week, the House Ways and Means Committee and the House Judiciary Committees issued subpoenas to both IRS investigators and DOJ officials regarding a meeting last fall when now Special Counsel David Weiss claimed that he was prevented from bringing charges against Hunter Biden for tax crimes. Well, folks, that's pretty serious. And if true, it would directly contradict testimony before Congress from U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, and as well as some written testimony from Special Counsel David Weiss. So the question at the heart of all of these subpoenas is, did the Biden administration interfere with the Hunter Biden investigation? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Mark Alford. He represents the 4th Congressional District of the great state of Missouri. Congressman Alford, always great to see you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, and our prayers tonight are with Tony's dad.
Thank you very much for that. Well, listen, these are some very serious questions regarding the integrity of the DOJ's Hunter Biden investigation. Overall, give me your thoughts on it.
Well, look, Jody, this is a disturbing time in American history. We know too well the persecution that President Trump has been in under for many years now. This is definitely a two-tier justice system that we're living under. Someone's either lying. It's either David Weiss or Merrick Garland in this. And I do believe that Jim Jordan and Jason Smith, chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, will get to the bottom of this before it's all over. It's sad that they have to subpoena people to come up to tell the truth on Capitol Hill. But that's where we are, this collusion, concerted effort, I think, to deceive the American people and to cover for the Biden crime family is disgusting, in my opinion. The truth will come out.
Well, you know, I think you bring up a good point. It really is disturbing to have to subpoena these people to come tell the truth to begin with. But what is even more disturbing is how they are obstructing congressional investigations. I mean, several agencies are literally not only causing troubles with the subpoenas, but they're obstructing the whole process. What do you make of that?
Well, exactly. This obstruction has gone for some time now. It's obfuscation, lies, deception, this whole web of deceit that the Biden crime family has kind of spun. I think Joe Biden's the black widow in the middle of all this. Even the National Archives, there are some emails that exist out there that have show a direct relationship between Hunter Biden, his associates that pumped some $20 million into these bank accounts and LLCs that the Biden crime family has set up over these years. And then Joe Biden as vice president using a pseudonym. Who uses a pseudonym unless someone's trying to hide something? And so, unfortunately, the two committees, Ways and Means and Judiciary, are having to now get them on record, to get them before committee, and to get them under subpoena to tell the truth to the American people.
Well, we are deeply grateful for the work of all these committees and you and yourself, your colleagues, for pushing on these type of issues. If I can switch to another topic, but still a topic regarding yet another subpoena, the House Republicans on the Homeland Security Committee have a subpoena now for Secretary Mayorkas, and specifically they're seeking information about a program that allows citizens from Cuba, from Haiti, from Nicaragua, and Venezuela to enter the United States on a temporary basis. And, you know, all of this to me is just another example of the Biden administration's failures at the border. Why are we letting these people in from these countries?
Well, Jody, that's a very good question. With a wink and a nod before he even took the oath of office, Joe Biden welcomed these illegal aliens, 5.8 million illegal aliens into our sovereign nation. Why are they doing this? Well, it's to build his voter base down the road, the voter base for the Democrats. They want to do this in an illegal fashion. Look, Republicans, conservatives, we want legal immigrants here to contribute to the fabric of our great nation. But we want it done legally. And cheating the immigration system like Mayorkas has done, saying that there's no crisis on the border, that is a lie to the American people. It's a lie to Congress. Merrick Garland, I truly believe, has perjured himself on several occasions before Congress. He is a bigger liar than Pinocchio, and it's time that somebody put a stop to it and removed him from office.
Well, it looks like that may be underway. I mean, there's a lot of movement behind his impeachment movement toward that end. But, you know, it forces someone to scratch their head when you have, I mean, we know the borders are so porous, but when you have countries like Cuba and Haiti and Nicaragua and Venezuela, countries that are so opposed to the values here in America, it just is disturbing to think what those individuals really are coming here for and the reasons before that. Before I run out of time, Congressman, let me hit one more news item for you and get your reaction to this. We've been covering a lot, as a lot of different individuals have, over the devastation in Maui. President Biden finally took time to visit the devastation there yesterday. And quite frankly, the reaction from both those in Hawaii as well as those watching from afar here in the mainland basically felt as though he would have been better off had he stayed away. I mean, he had a bizarre exaggeration about losing his house in a fire. It looked like he fell asleep during a speech, and then immediately he goes back on vacation. Does it seem like he went there just to kind of check this off the box to say, I went there? Or what are your thoughts?
Jody, I wish I could figure this president out. I don't even think he knows where he is or what day it is half the time. Do you remember back during and after Katrina, how the media eviscerated President George W. Bush for his what they considered a lack of a proper response to the tragedy that was happening in Katrina? Yet he was in a helicopter with a FEMA director flying over the damage and actively trying to be there and connect with people, as he did after the fall of the Twin Towers on 9/11. Joe Biden does not connect with people that way. He uses his own stories to try to do that. They're feeble. He is a failing, flailing, feckless leader. And to spend half your vacation, half your time on vacation on the beach in Delaware, and then to mosey on over to Hawaii and Maui is no excuse. Had I been president of the United States, I would have been there on the main island within a day's time with my FEMA director, making sure that the eyes and the hearts of America were there with the people of Hawaii. That's what he should have done.
That's what he should have done. And you would think that's what any president would have done in a situation like this. But last week, he had no comment when asked about it. In fact, there were many who were present yesterday holding up signs saying no comment and go home, Joe. I mean, it really seemed to be he had to go, but it seems as though he had this as just a check off the box to say he went and to act as though he really cares.
Well, I think it's gotten to the point now, unfortunately, I think we are seeing the degradation of a human mind right before our very eyes. If you look back at videotape and speeches from even a year ago, you can see how far his decline has gone. Without a pocket card telling him what to say each time, no comments, probably the best thing he can come up with.
Well, no pocket card necessary for you, Congressman Alford. It's always an honor to have you on the program. You always bring us the latest as to what's happening there in D.C. and do it with great eloquence in every way. And we are deeply appreciative of all the great work that you and your colleagues are doing. Keep it up.
Well, thank you, Jody. And please, as we pray for Tony's dad, keep praying for us in Congress. We have tough work to do in the next couple of months.
You sure do. And we will keep those, each of you, in our prayers. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, friends, after the break, a federal court has reversed the block on an Alabama law meant to protect children from permanent lifelong damage to their bodies. Stay tuned. Attorney General from Alabama joins me.
In recent years, Christians have seen an accelerated assault on not just our core beliefs, but their very foundation. Now is the time to build on that foundation, strengthen our faith, and learn how to translate our beliefs into actions that engage the culture around us. That's the purpose behind this year's Pray Vote Stand Summit, Believe and Engage. Pray Vote Stand Summit is a national gathering of spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives, or SageCons. We'll hear from Christian leaders, worldview experts, government officials, and more. We'll discuss important issues like the sanctity of life, religious freedom, protecting students, strengthening families, praying for our nation, and how you can impact America's future from a biblical worldview. Together, we can believe and engage. Join us September 15th through 17th in Washington, D.C. for this pivotal event. Register now at prayvotestand.org.
everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, an honor to be with you this afternoon. Yesterday, a federal court allowed the state of Alabama to begin enforcing a ban on performing permanent so-called gender transition surgeries on minors. A three-judge panel of the Atlanta-based 11th U.S. Circuit of Court of Appeals sided with the state of Alabama over objections from a group of transgender minors and their parents who argued that the state law violated the 14th Amendment. Well, the three-judge panel repeatedly cited the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in its Dobbs case from last year, and with the court finding that there was no deeply rooted right to the use of medications in the nation's history. Well, joining me now by phone to discuss this big news is Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall. Attorney General Marshall, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you, sir.
Thank you, Jody, and I appreciate you highlighting this issue.
Well, it's a big issue. It's a big deal. This is a huge victory, obviously, for the state of Alabama, but this is a big victory for children and for the country as a whole. Let's begin by giving us the legal reasoning, the underpinning, if you will, of this 11th Court of Appeals, the 11th Circuit's decision.
You know, Jody, I think you highlighted one of the important things, which is this really is an extension of what the Supreme Court recognized in Dobbs, and that is that state legislatures have the opportunity to be able to weigh in on medical issues involving their state. Clearly, the 11th Circuit opinion said there's no substantive right for parents to be able to choose experimental treatment for their children. And when we saw the Alabama legislature, along with now significant other states around our country doing the same thing, weighing in to say that we're not going to allow a failed European experiment be used against our kids in our respective states, we think this is not only a tremendous victory for the rule of law, but most importantly, in being able to protect children who can receive critical care absent these experimental treatments.
Well, it really is huge, and that's why we wanted to highlight it here. This, you know, it's amazing to me, Attorney General, how news like this is swept under the rug by so much of the mainstream media, but it is groundbreaking decisions. This is a huge victory for children and parents in our country across the board. And you have organizations like the SPLC and the Human Rights Campaign, these type of organizations are representing the plaintiffs in this case. But what does this decision mean on a practical level for specifically for Alabama, but even beyond?
Yeah, and Joe, let's not forget that the Department of Justice has weighed in again, and this is, you know, again, part of the Biden's radical transgender movement that they have pushed during this administration. But, you know, for Alabama kids, what it means is that we're going to ensure that they're not receiving medications the FDA has not approved for the purpose in which it's being offered right now. It's going to allow for there to be viable and alternative means to be able to treat gender dysphoria that doesn't create the same risk that they would have currently with the experimental treatment that's being used. But also outside of Alabama itself, you know, we've got hearings coming up involving laws in Kentucky and Tennessee. We have an Arkansas law that is currently pending. We have Indiana, who has their law that's being challenged and being heard in courts here soon. And so the 11th Circuit speaking in this case, just as we had recently the 6th Circuit as well, I think is sending a very strong message to states around the country that you have the ability and the authority to weigh in on this issue, and you need to weigh in on behalf of the children that you're trying to protect.
Well, and it amplifies the power and the importance of states to push back on some of these horrible things that are happening from the federal government and the push for this. You mentioned multiple states just moments ago who were involved in this type of thing. So my question is, where is all this leading? Do you think at some point with all these various states passing laws to protect children, is it inevitable that one of these eventually is going to go to the Supreme Court?
I think it's clear that is an option, particularly if there remains a circuit split. But one thing, Jody, that I think I'm excited about for Alabama is that we're going to have an opportunity to really be able to expose the lies around the international organizations that have propounded this type of treatment that Europe has rejected as should be the standard of care in our country. And so we look forward to continuing the work that we're doing in our litigation, proud of the team that we put together. Because when you have organizations like WPATH that are masquerading as scientific organizations that are truly advocacy organizations for the transgender movement, then we have the opportunity now to put that under the crucible of litigation and make people swear under oath and to be able to expose what Europe already knows and to be able to reveal that in our country, that this is not the direction we need to be going with healthcare.
And this is not something just Europe knows. I mean, any reasonable person understands this is bad policy. It's bad idea. It's bad science. It is not health care. It is on every way. It's irreversible to these children. And it's just stunning that we even are finding ourselves in the middle of this debate. One thing that is happening across the country is a lot of pushback when individuals like you, states like Alabama, stand up for children's rights. Are you now, or do you expect pushback against this law?
Oh, I think clearly we've seen it before, and we're going to continue to see it. When you have groups like ACLU, SPLC, and others that really advance an argument that frankly is not grounded in true science and at least appropriate science. But I think maybe the other thing that hopefully is going to come from this is parents having the opportunity to truly understand what this is about. Because parents depend on doctors, they depend on physicians to give them good advice. The more we can expose the fallacy of what's going on here, and in fact, the real danger that children are exposed to, then we're going to give parents the opportunity to make good decisions as well.
Yeah, and it's stunning how so many different places are trying to push parents out of even having a decision in this, beginning in schools, different places across the country. And listen, it takes tremendous courage for individuals like you, leaders like you, to stand up at moments like this in our country. And so I just want to extend to you, Attorney General Steve Marshall, a huge thank you for all that you've done, and may just the good hand of God be upon you as you go forward.
We appreciate it, and we're going to continue that fight.
I know you will. Thank you for joining us. All right, friends, coming up next here on Washington Watch, a California public library silences a female athlete for misgendering. I guarantee you don't want to miss the story that you're about to hear on the other side of this break. So stay tuned. We'll be right back in a moment.
all of us are born with the desire to find truth and meaning. Where did I come from? What happens when I die? While our answers to these questions may divide us, we are united in our need for the freedom to answer life's biggest questions and make life's biggest decisions for ourselves. That's why religious freedom matters for everyone. Religious freedom matters because the powerful have long wanted to control those who are less powerful. Religious freedom matters because the freedom of those who are different is often threatened by those who believe different is dangerous. Leah Sheribu, a Christian teenager in Nigeria, remains a captive of Boko Haram for her refusal to renounce her Christian faith. Chinese pastor Wang Yi is serving a 9-year sentence for speaking publicly against the Chinese government. In Pakistan, Asif Pervez is on death row for allegedly sending a blasphemous text message. All of this because people in power decided different is dangerous. At the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, we promote religious freedom for everyone because the only alternative is religious freedom for no one. We encourage Americans and the American government to engage and advocate for the persecuted, and they do. We work every day to bring good news to the afflicted, to proclaim liberty to captives and freedom to prisoners. We do it because that's what Jesus does. We work to give freedom to others because we ourselves have been set free.
Good afternoon. I'm Jody Heiss, your host this evening on Washington Watch. Hope you've had a fantastic Tuesday, and thank you for joining us. All right, there was an event to discuss protecting women's sport at a Davis, California public library, and it was shut down Sunday after library officials accused the first speaker of violating California law by misgendering male athletes who were competing in women's sports. They later accused this speaker of being disruptive. Here's that exchange.
I need to know why I'm being told to leave. Can you tell me why? I was a speaker at this meeting. I will leave the building if you can tell me why I need to leave the building.
Wow. Well, the woman who was being told to leave the event, in spite of the fact that she was the speaker at the event, is Sophia Lori. She is a former collegiate soccer player who now serves as an outreach coordinator for the California Family Council, and she is also very dear to us here at FRC, having been a former intern here with us. Well, she joins me now from California to discuss all of this. Sophia, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to see you again.
Great to see you. Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's our pleasure, and listen, thank you for your courageous leadership and you're standing strong. We appreciate all that you're doing. Listen, let's just begin with the whole event. We heard the clip. We saw the clip. There were others there. There's a lot of noise in the kerfuffle of it all. But tell us about the event and what happened.
Well, Moms for Liberty of Yolo County here in Northern California was just hosting a forum on fair and safe sports for girls. The whole goal was just to let those in the community be aware of how women and girls are being put in unfair and unsafe situations in sports. And I was the MC and the first speaker, and within about a minute of me speaking, the event was shut down.
Wow. Well, listen, let me just tell you, Sophia, there are certain times where these things happen and they confirm that you're on the right side of an issue. When you consider the audience and those who shut you down, you know you are pushing in the right direction. But without getting into all the particulars of the California law, this was clearly a violation of the First Amendment, which, of course, the First Amendment is federal law, which trumps any state law. And I think it was one of your colleagues there or another speaker who actually went up to the podium and made clear that you were there and you had the right to free speech And the audience was free to leave if they wanted to. But of course, that message didn't fit well with the agenda of the library officials. What do you think was the rationale behind them shutting it down?
Well, like you said, there really was no rationale because they were violating my First Amendment right. They claimed I was misgendering someone by stating men should not be in girls' sports. And yet, no one should be punished for stating a biological fact.
Yeah, I mean, how is that misgendering? I mean, even with you saying so, I mean, it's as obvious as night and day. But you were in California, so things night and day is a little bit different out there. Listen, I want to tell you, you really handled yourself well. You handled the situation well. It was a very hostile crowd, and you stood firm, and you stood extremely poised. And I want you to know, Sophia, here on Washington Watch, you are allowed to call men men. You are allowed to call women women. So you were shut down. Why don't you give us a summary of what you would have shared had you been allowed to continue speaking?
I was simply just there to share my own story. I wasn't talking about other people. I wasn't giving anything in regards to the law. I was simply there to state that when I was 10 years old, all I wanted to be was a college soccer player. And I achieved that goal at 18. I was able to play college soccer all 4 years. And that my heart is broken, that current girls today can't achieve this same goal because men are taking their spots on the teams. Yet, my story was apparently controversial and was, again, shut down.
Wow. So where's this all going to go from here? Do you know, is there going to be any action taken against the library?
Well, we're currently looking into our best option because government officials should not be able to remove my freedom of speech. So we're taking those next steps, as well as I just want the story to get out there because I don't want any other girl to experience what I had to go through at that library.
Well, that's great to hear because both of what you just mentioned, both points need to be taken. Protection of your story and other women, but also to stand up when people disregard and disrespect your First Amendment rights. We have to stand up against this stuff. And again, thank you for doing so. Do you think anyone at the library there even recognizes their mistake? Were they more concerned about just not letting you speak? Do they realize that they really trampled your First Amendment rights?
Well, I can't speak on behalf of what they're thinking now. We haven't seen any statements or comments from them, but I can speak on the fact that they evidently thought that your First Amendment right disappears when you have differences in your ideologies. And so I want to make sure that the whole world knows that, and here in America, our opinions do not make us silent.
Sophia Lori, thank you so much for standing strong, standing tall, and for representing the California Family Council, for representing so many millions across America. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
All right, friends, coming up, George Barna will join me with some practical advice for parents and grandparents on raising their children to be disciples for Christ. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It begins here, and here, and here, every day. Before you stand, you need solid ground. Standing in a culture that wants you to surrender the truth won't work unless you have a firm foundation. At Family Research Council, we have that firm foundation, and you can find us standing. We stand for the value of all human life. We stand for the right of families to flourish. And every day we stand for your freedom to believe and to live out those beliefs both at home and abroad. We work with government officials, educating them on the issues from a biblical worldview. And when necessary, we hold them accountable. We equip Christians across America to be informed and to take action in their communities. With our daily radio program, television appearances, and vast online presence, we reach people where they are We envision an America where all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. And that won't be realized if we're not standing. Stand for faith. Stand for family. Stand for freedom. Stand with us at FRC.
I'm often asked by people, Tony, how do you stay encouraged? How do you deal with all of the stuff in Washington, D.C., the negative policies that are attacking our faith, our family, and our freedoms? Well, you want me to let you in on the secret? It's called the Word of God. And that is why the Family Research Council embarked on Stand on the Word, a 2-year journey through the Bible. It's a chronological Bible reading plan with just 10 to 15 minutes a day. In 2 years, you will have covered the entire Bible. And to go along with this, Monday through Friday, I do a morning devotional that goes along with the reading of the day. It's all designed to encourage you on this journey because the Word of God, as the psalmist said, in my affliction, here's my comfort, your word gives me life. That is our source of strength. To find out more, go to tonyperkins.com or frc.org/Bible. And I invite you to join me every morning for our Stand on the Word Bible devotion.
This fall, believers from across America will gather in our nation's capital. We'll hear from government leaders, policy experts, and leading Christian voices, learning how we can engage in government at every level, from local school boards to state legislatures to Congress and even the White House, to win back the soul of our nation. Join with us for the Pray, Vote, Stand Summit, Believe and Engage, September 15th through 17th. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org. FRC celebrating 40 years with Pastor Gary Hamrick.
Wishing everybody at Family Research Council a happy 40th anniversary. As a church, it's our joy to partner with such a great ministry like yours. You're on the front line of fighting for faith, family, and freedom. So thank you, Tony Perkins, all the staff and all the volunteers at Family Research Council, and happy 40th anniversary.
And thank you, Pastor Gary Hamrick, for your leadership and your kind words. Friends, listen, there is not much that's more important as a Christian citizen than to learn how to effectively engage Christian principles in our culture. And that begins with our families. It goes beyond to our friends, our neighbors, where we work, and beyond. And we are partnering with you to help accomplish that goal, to teach all of us how to be more effective. And we want to invite you to come join us September 15th through 17th in Washington, D.C. for this year's Pray, Vote, Stand Summit. It, of course, is our 40th year of standing for faith, family, and freedom. But friends, we're at a crossroad in our country, and now we need men and women to stand in the gap and to make a difference. So we encourage you to come join us. Registration is now open. We're less than a month away. Please visit PrayVoteStand.org for details and to register. We look forward to seeing you there. All right, let me begin by this statement. If we do not get it right with young children, the chances are good we will never see those people mature into real disciples of Jesus. That provocative quotation is from an upcoming book called Raising Spiritual Champions. It's by George Barna. The book's subtitle is Discipling America's Children. That subtitle, listen, that works as a great slogan for what we here at Washington Watch and Family Research Center consider to be of utmost importance. The book identifies why it's important for Christian parents to raise their children with biblical worldviews, but it also outlines some key strategies of how to do so effectively. What a needed book. Joining me now to discuss this is George Barna, who is the Senior Research Fellow for the Center of Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council. George, welcome back to the program. Great to see you.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's good to see you too.
Well, listen, you share in the book really a reversal of thought, if I can put it that way, where you had a light bulb went off and you recognized the importance of reaching children Tell us about that experience.
You know, that was about 25 years ago or so, I believe, that when I still owned the Barna Research Group. I've since sold it. But at that time, we were looking for another research project to do that we could present to pastors of churches around the country, helping them to understand what was going on in the culture, what was important in ministry, different practices that were and were not working, both within the culture and within churches. And we were going to do a national seminar with four different sessions during the course of the day. We needed a fourth session. We'd figured out the other three sessions. We'd been doing these kind of national seminars for years, so we'd already blown through most of the popular topics, and we were just looking for that final topic. And one of my colleagues in the Barna Group said, you know, we should do something about ministry to children. And I don't remember if I exactly laughed at her, but certainly internally I was. Oh, what a stupid idea. We're going to talk to pastors. We're going to be with adults. We're going to be talking about serious stuff. We're going to be talking about the future of the church, how to transform the culture, all these kind of things. Why would we waste an hour and a half talking about children? And the team around the table, we batted that back and forth. I went away and thought about the different options that we put on the table for the fourth session. And as I started thinking and praying about it and doing a little bit of research, I thought, yeah, we better, we'll take this on. Seems like it might be a good complement to what else we were doing. But I'll tell you what, over the next 18 months, as we did all the research preceding going out on the road to do the seminar and present what we found in the research, I was completely blown away. I realized for the first time that up to that point in my life, and I was probably, I don't know, early to mid 30s at that point, I had bought into the myth, the lie, if you will, that effective ministry is all about focusing on adults. Now, I'll tell you, in the 25 years since then that we started doing that research, and I've been building on that for the last quarter century, one of the things that I've discovered is that adults basically don't change. Now, the Holy Spirit can change anybody at any time. I'm not questioning that, don't doubt that. I've seen that, I get it. But I'm a sociologist and a researcher, and I deal with averages. And I'll tell you that on average, adults do not change unless they encounter a major crisis in their life. It's completely different with children. Children are in a period of their life where they're trying to figure out, how does life work? What matters? Who am I? Why am I here? All kinds of very fundamental questions that once they answer those questions, they retain the answers for the rest of their lives, and they build on those as foundation stones. And so being able to effectively minister to children is absolutely critical to seeing them not only come to Christ, but to becoming disciples of Jesus. I would make a sharp distinction between those two. Part of the problem in the church in America is that we've got tens of millions of people who have accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior, but they haven't really committed their life to being Christ-like, to serving Christ, to knowing Him more deeply, to living every moment of every day to bring Him honor and glory. And so this book, Raising Spiritual Champions, is all about the research that we've been doing. And we did this in conjunction with Family Research Council. I'm so proud and happy about that. You know, to discover, yeah, what is the situation today? What's working today when it comes to raising children to be spiritual champions, not only as their parents, but maybe you're a grandparent. Maybe you're a sports team coach. Maybe there's something else that you're doing that allows you to interact with children, teaching or whatever it may be. All of us have interaction with children, but what we discovered in the research is very few adults spend any time at all thinking about, much less planning for, their interactions with children and what they can do to bring them closer and closer and closer to Christ.
That's an amazing story, George, how you got to this point, and that you've got incredible data to back it up. How is a child's worldview developed, and what age does that happen? You say adults don't change. When can all that development take place in a child?
Yeah, you know, essentially we found that there are four different worldview phases that people go through. And the most important of those is the first phase. And it starts when somebody is 15 to 18 months of age, not years of age, 15 to 18 months of age. And that worldview development phase is essentially completed by the time they reach the age of 13. Now, during the teens and 20s, up to the mid-20s, sometimes later 20s, what we find is that people take that worldview that young children develop as the foundation for their life. Why does a worldview matter? Because it's the decision-making filter that every single person has. Every decision that you make, every decision I make, every decision everybody who's with us today ever makes is made on the basis of their worldview. And so their worldview is their intellectual, their emotional, their moral and spiritual filter that helps them to understand how things work, what's right, what's proper, what's appropriate, how they're going to navigate life. And so that is put in place by the age of 13. You can begin to understand why at 15 to 18 months of age, a worldview begins to form. It's because kids at that age are making decisions. They're making choices about, you know, when to cry, when to hit, when to spit, you know, when to crawl away, when to obey, all those kinds of things. And it gets more and more sophisticated as the child ages. Well, by the age of 13, most of the major things that anybody is going to face in life, we have already had to think about. So it's during those teen and 20s, years of the 20s, that we take that foundation and we try to refine it. We try to figure out how to articulate it. Are there ways we need to reshape it? How do we integrate it into everything that we do, into who we see ourselves, our personal identity? And then by the time we reach our late 20s, early 30s, on up through our 60s, that's when we become evangelists. Some people are shocked when they hear I say everybody's an evangelist in America, but what we're trying to do is to evangelize other people to think the same way we do. We want them to embrace our worldview, see the world the way that we see it, respond to situations the way that we respond, make the same decisions that we would make in given situations. And then we found that from the late 60s on is a time of reflection where Americans tend to sit back and review what happened during the course of their life. Did they make the right decisions? Did they have the right foundation from which to make those decisions? Are there changes they should make now in their waning years? Are there things that they should share with their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, their neighbors, their friends, about the things that they have learned related to worldview? Because worldview is the centerpiece of your life. It determines every choice you make and therefore who you are.
Absolutely fascinating. Yeah, you have also found that many born-again, church-going believers, are really, they're not teaching a biblical worldview to their children. And so what's happening to them instead?
Well, essentially what's happened is we've developed a kind of a new model of parenting, which I describe as outsourcing. And, you know, we're familiar with that in the business world, but it's really invaded the parenting world as well, where because we love our children and we want them to have the best experiences and outcomes, what we begin to do is look for people who can do the best job in different dimensions of our children's lives. And so we'll look for the best teachers, the best coaches, all of these kind of people who we can hire or cajole into spending a lot of time with our kids to give them whatever kind of training and development and experiences that they may need. But what's happened as a result of that outsourcing model is that parents have stepped back and they've handed over the worldview development process to all of these outsourced experts, the professionals, the ones who allegedly have better experiences, better processes than we do as parents. So many parents told us, you know, I really don't think I'm a very good parent. You know, I think I'm doing the best job I can. And, you know, you can't fault me for that. But what we discovered is that most parents have no plan for what they're going to do to raise their children up. less than 10% of them have any kind of a spiritual plan, spiritual development plan for their children. And that includes worldview development. And then when you look at the parents themselves, what we know is that only 2% of parents in America today actually have a biblical worldview. You can't give what you don't have. So we're in a situation where we've got a lot of parents who are winging it. They love their kids. They're trying to buy expertise, but they're allowing those experts to develop the worldview of their children, along with the media. We did find that the media has the greatest impact on worldview of anything else.
All right, George, we've only got about a couple of minutes left here. So let's bring this up to some practical applications. What are some strategies that parents can use to disciple their children?
Well, first thing is to get in your mind that your primary job in life is to raise your children to know, love, and serve God with all their heart, mind, strength, and soul. That is one of the things that you will be judged upon. That is your primary task here on earth, just as it's your primary task, my primary task, to know, love, and serve God with all my heart, mind, strength, and soul. And so I need to make sure that my children are pursuing that as well. If I have that in my mind, then I realize, okay, I've got to have a plan for how I'm going to do this. We found that parents that had a spiritual and worldview development plan are much more effective at raising spiritual champions. Those who are consistent with their children over the course of the 15 to 20 years they have their children, they're much more effective building deep relationships with their children, which means investing a lot of time. But when you're doing it, not always telling them what to do or to think, but spending time listening to what the child is saying so that you can respond appropriately, knowing where you want to take them, hearing where they're at, and then bringing them forward to a different place. And making sure that the Bible is the foundation of your conversations. We found that these conversations have to take place around real world events. Tell stories, get examples from your children of what they're going through in life, and relate biblical principles to those stories. But do it not by beating them over the head with God's word, but by asking them questions about what they believe, why they believe it, what they did, why they did it, asking if they're familiar with different biblical principles. Do they think that might have worked in the situation? Those kind of conversations are so critical, but none of it will take root, we discovered, unless you as a parent model that in your own life. That's part of that consistency element, which was so critical.
George, congratulations on another terrific book. We've only got 15 seconds or so. When will it be released and how can people get it?
Labor Day is release date, so we're just a couple weeks away from that. And it'll be available through Amazon.com. That's the place to go to get it. You can pre-order it now. You can wait till it comes out. And they can also get it at the event, in D.C.
Gotta let it go there. George Barna, thank you so much for joining us. Terrific information. All right, friends, that wraps up this edition. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.